Chapter 34. After 10 days of grueling travel, Miss Ironhorn announced that they would at last see Frostbourne before the sun set. The fine black carriage commissioned on the Queen's farthing carried Ariane and Missa, Emile and Oriana across a bumpy road through open fields of grass-covered hills. The brooding sky and stiff wind matched the mood of the women that bounced along in silence. Ariane kept her gaze pegged to the outdoors. While warm in temperature, the northwestern reaches of the Tabor's duchy felt cold. When they crossed the Ebb River, Emile pointed out the road that led south to the city of Tabor and promptly burst into tears as it reminded her of her now ex-fiancé. Ariane couldn't bring herself to comfort the young woman. Emile had tortured them for 10 days, and neither Ariane nor the lady's maids had a kind thought in their heads for the embittered, opportunistic woman. For the first 3 days she had cried uncontrollably, wailing about how the Earl of Tabor would never want her again and how her life was ruined. The fourth and fifth days she cursed Davon with all manner of vulgar language that she could conjure. It was all Ariane could do not to reach out and slap the woman. Oriana clearly felt the same. Days 6 through 8, Emile plotted out her future course. She had quite humbly admitted that her chances of being a duke's wife were now slim, so she relegated herself to naming off the likely candidates among the marquises. This animated frenzy of hopeful prognostications died on day 9, when Miss Ironhorn settled into an irritable depression that had persisted since then. She was quite convinced now that no man of consequence would ever want her, and she would have to go rooting around in the dirt after the sons of barons and knights. The only relief for Ariane was that Emile's unremitting self-absorption had spared her any need to remark or offer opinions on anything. That Emile Ironhorn thought that Ariane hated Davon as much as she did was plainly evident, but everyone else in the carriage knew the opposite was true, the three of them sharing furtive looks to lend their miserable confinement some levity. The road took them north that morning, the fragrant spruce boughs of the Windhill Forest finally relieving the bleak monotony of the grassy plains. The four mounted carriage guards pulled in close. The northern woods were known for their packs of direwolves. As the afternoon wore on, the iron walls of grey covering the sun finally broke into ragged shreds of clouds, the afternoon light burning their feathered edges. Emile, pale and silent, wiped her eyes and sat up as the sharp scent of the trees filled the carriage, blown in on a vigorous breeze.
"How I hate that smell," she said. "That stench pervades Frostbourne. Those trees surround the house. Davon refused to cut them down. That shall be the first thing I do when we get there. I'll have those trees chopped down just to spite him so that if the Queen ever does reinstate him, which I doubt, he will come back to find those nasty trees of his just piles to be burned. I shall swing the axe myself if it comes to it." She reached out and took Ariane's hand. "And I shall let you have a swing at one yourself, for Lord Caunton's sake."
Ariane snatched her hand away.
"You insult my honour if you think that I would stoop to such petty schemes of revenge. He killed your husband."
"Defending your honour, Miss Ironhorn," Ariane returned.
"His defence was unnecessary," Emile said haughtily.
"Yes, it was," Ariane agreed. "Unnecessary and pointless. But it was done, and done for you. Did you ever thank him for it?"
"Thank Lord Carver?"
"Yes," Ariane said. "Thank him for defending your honour." Emile looked away.
"Of course I did.
The Baron wrote and apologised to me not long afterward."
"You see," Emile exclaimed, thinking she had won a point. "Even he realised his mistake. The brute!"
"Yes," Ariane said. "I dare say by then he had quite realised his mistake." She shot a knowing grin at Missa and Oriana, who stifled their smiles. The road curved and sloped, more snaking around hills and twisting between stands of beautiful blue spruce as they wound closer toward Frostbourne. A stubborn mammoth held them up for several minutes, standing still in the middle of the road. Its curved tusks were discoloured and spotted with moss. Ariane hung out the window to get a good look at it. She'd never seen one of the beasts so close. Its powerful presence and humourless eyes intimidated and delighted her. The men shot in the air to no avail, and it tromped a leg down hard upon the road with a trumpeting challenge. The horses whickered nervously and backed the carriage away.
"How I hate those things," Emile grumped. "If it charges, it will be the doom of us all."
The woolly beast finally moved off, and the driver whipped the horses into a quick pace. No doubt the woods proved dangerous after dark. Just before sunset, they pulled through the gate of Frostborn Manor, a stiff evening wind scraping the branches of the massive firs across the wooden shingles of the rustic home. The servants, quite unprepared for their arrival, bolted about, a thin, proper man standing on the porch, barking orders.
"This is Mr. Simmons," Emile informed them. "I hired him as steward to replace Mr. Saunders. How I hated that man."
The carriage stopped, and a footman stepped forward to help them debark. The wind whipped their dresses and their hair about as if offering a rough greeting. Ariane smiled. The place was wild and tempestuous, its unrefined nature appealing in its own way. Wolves howled at the close of day, dogs braying in return from kennels somewhere behind the house. The edifice itself was clean and made of patchwork stone, sturdy and colourful, a hedge of tiny purple flowers encircling its base. Servants scrambled to light lanterns hanging from strong wooden beams that supported the roof of the porch. Emile clutched her hat as she stepped down onto the drive.
"How I hate this wind!"
Mr. Simmons stepped forward.
"We were unaware of your return, Lady Carver. We are quite unprepared for you this evening, though we should have a good supper for you in an hour."
"It's Miss Ironhorn again, Mr. Simmons," Emile said acidly.
"I beg your pardon?"
"Later, Mr. Simmons. Let us get out of this wind."
Oriana suddenly gasped, a realization dawning on her face.
"They don't know."
"Don't know what, Ori?"
Emile asked. "That Baron Carver is alive,"
Oriana exclaimed, face beaming.
"That you're divorced." "I'm sure they hardly care,"
Emile grumped. Ariane grinned at Emile's disingenuous statement. During her two-day diatribe about Davin, she repeatedly mentioned how infuriating it was that everyone at Frostborn worshipped their lord.
"Mr. Simmons," Ariane said, "please send word to the staff and the town that Davin Carver lives. The Queen has stripped him of his title and his estate, but has expressed to me that she may restore them in the future. Also inform them that he and Miss Ironhorn are divorced, and that she is returning to Ironhorn."
"But of course, Miss..."
"I am Lady Ariane Hightower."
His eyes widened and he stood a little straighter.
"Yes, my lady, I will do it by and by."
"Thank you."
Emile's eyes shot daggers at her, but Ariane hardly cared. Oriana was fit to burst and Missa smiled along with her. They stepped in out of the wind, their shoes scuffling along the thick wooden planks that comprised the floor. The door squeaked shut and Missa and Oriana began the work of collecting hats and shawls. Ariane grinned as she noticed that the house's decorations evidenced the divide of its lord and lady. The rustic and rough clashed with the fashionable and delicate. An exquisite white vase sat atop a beaten wooden stand that probably had once held pots in the kitchen. Simple wooden frames bordering pastoral scenes mixed with painted views of cities in curved gilded ones. The furniture had largely been replaced to match Emile's current tastes, but an old leather chair still lurked in a corner here and there. Mr. Simmons approached.
"We are preparing rooms for you and your lady's maid, Lady Hightower," he said. "Please give us a few moments. I apologize for the delay."
"Take your time, Mr. Simmons," she answered. "I'd like to look about."
"There's little to see," Emile said. "This manor was hardly big enough for just Davin and his servants. We could hardly have guests without them feeling cramped. Come, Ori, let's get to my room and out of this dress, and my hair is just a fright."
The two ascended a dark wooden stair to the second level, and Missa breathed a sigh of relief. Ariane turned to her lady's maid and raised her eyebrows.
Emile. What a miserable woman. She must have been truly desperate to fake being interested in Davin Carver. And an amazing actress to boot. And Davin must have been out of his wits.
Mr. Simmons left them to their own devices and they wandered about the bottom floor. The drawing room was clearly all Emile's and hardly looked like it was a part of the same house. It had a large window looking out to the front of the manor, one of the offending spruce trees half concealing a view of the drive. Ariane had to admit that the room felt the most familiar to her. She was used to the more refined styles that Emile favoured, though the country manor appealed to her in the same way the elderwood had in Harrickshire. Something about raw, earthy nature spoke to her. It felt honest. Still, she wondered how she would fare if she were to be taken so far away from society and its urban comforts. Would she be content if Davin brought her into his rural home as he had Emile? It would take some getting used to, but if Davin were near, she thought she could be very happy indeed.
"Pleasant thoughts, m'lady?"
Missa asked, a smile on her lips. They both studied a board that displayed the teeth of a sabre cat.
"This place fits him, doesn't it?"
Ariane said.
"By him, I suppose you mean Baron Carver,"
Of course, Monsieur. Who else? I suppose it does, Missa answered. It speaks to both his strength and his loneliness.
Ariane regarded her lady's maid. She was always a quiet girl, but she suspected the silence only made space for observation.
Has Oriana said anything of her master, or her feelings on learning that he was alive? Yes, of course, Missa nodded. She has nothing but respect for the man, nothing but joy in her heart at his return.
But what of faking his own death? Ariane pressed.
Missa frowned.
She doesn't blame him.
And this troubles you?
I can hardly make sense of it, Lady Hightower, though,
and she dropped her voice to a whisper,
after that carriage ride, I have a better idea of what his life was before. I still can't think it well done. How could he give up everything to her when it was she that wronged him so terribly? How could he leave Frostborn after he had worked so hard for it?
I have wondered the same, Ariane concurred. But one question bothers me more.
And what is that, milady?
How can a man who has suffered as much horror and shame and disappointment as Baron Carver act with such natural compassion rather than bitterness and revenge? The way he cared for me in Belsha.
She couldn't speak, emotion welling up and choking off her voice. She put her hand to her mouth and tried to clear her throat. Missa squeezed her arm sympathetically.
He was peculiarly ardent in his ministrations, Lady Hightower. I believe he holds you in high regard. Well, now that he is divorced, we can only hope he can find someone who can return his affections properly.
I wish that as well,
Ariane said, ignoring Missa's knowing look. Oriana found them a short while later.
Miss Ironhorn is busy packing for her departure, and she asked me to let you know that we shall have supper soon. Let me show you to where you'll be staying, Lady Hightower. The only room worthy of such an illustrious guest as yourself is Baron Carver's room, where he kept to himself during the, difficulties. I hope that this does not make you uncomfortable.
She was thrilled.
Not in the least, I assure you.
Oriana led them upstairs to the second level, the lanterns casting a happy yellow glow along the hall. She turned right down a hallway lined with more framed specimens from Davin's adventures in the wild, pressed flowers, enormous leaves from elder oaks, and more teeth and bones from creatures vicious and tame. They reached an intersecting hall and turned left. As they passed an aging door, Oriana suddenly moved from the centre of the hallway to scrape along the right wall, as if afraid something might jump out. Ariane stopped.
Are we quite safe, Oriana?
She turned, red blooming on her cheeks.
I am sorry, milady. Old habit. That door, well, it is the room where Davin's father, Asper Carver, took his own life, while Davin watched. Some of the servants say it is haunted.
It's silly.
Baron Carver expressly prohibited anyone from entering that room. He never went in it himself. From the stories in town, not a soul has been inside since the funeral. Not that anyone would want to go in.
So that is where Davin's trial of life began,
Ariane mused, wondering what witnessing such an act might do to a young man. She remembered the Queen telling her that most boys would have crumbled under the weight of such a burden. Mother dead, father dead, estate indebted. How had he carried on? Where had the metal come from?
Come, Oriana prodded. We're almost there.
As she passed the door, Oriana let her fingers trail along the discoloured iron lock with its gaping keyhole. A cold draught wafted from beneath the door like a spectral hand reaching out to touch her. The skin on her legs goosebumped. As the frigid feeling faded, the idea wormed its way into her head. She wanted to see inside. She wanted to know what Davin saw, know what it felt like. If he had shut the door and never re-entered, then the pain of memory was locked inside, locked away so he wouldn't have to face it again. Oriana opened the door to Davin's old room at the far end of the hall. It was clean and modestly appointed. A fire burned in a hearth nearly bereft of old ash. The room had lain dormant for some time. A darkly stained wood made up the bed frame, appointments, and the trim, but the room was plastered white and was more genteel than Ariane had expected. None of the walls held any of the collected flora and fauna found in the rest of the house, excepting Emile's drawing room. Delicate white drapes swooped to the floor, pleasant paintings of people and buildings lining the wall. Delicately tooled boxes and glass figurines sat atop the fireplace mantel and on decorative shelves.
"Is this the way Baron Carver kept the room?" Ariane asked.
"Yes, milady," Oriana said. "Doesn't seem much like him, does it?"
"My thought exactly." "Lady Hightower, if I may be so bold," Oriana said, fidgeting nervously with her hands. "I think he kept it this way as an invitation to the lady of the house, if you take my meaning."
Ariane cast a meaningful glance at the door, and Misa shut it.
I know I have no right to pry, Oriana, Ariane said, but were things very miserable here?
Tears welled in Oriana's eyes, and she looked away for a moment.
There wasn't yelling and fighting. It was just the cold torture of her neglect and cruelty that stung him. Never have I seen a man try so hard to win a woman over, and she treated every attempt with poisonous contempt. All of us were relieved when he stopped trying. We thought, perhaps, that he would move on, but I could see that it ate at him day after day. He took to long excursions in the outdoors. She took to dreaming of big cities and high society.
She wiped her eyes before continuing.
We were attending a party at the Tarbis when word came that Baron Carver had died. I nearly fainted. She had to stifle a giggle. I have hated her ever since. I've been searching for other employment for some time, but without success. I am trapped with her for the time being.
Ariane nodded and took her hand. Oriana loved the Baron too.
I am sorry. I will help you. I am well connected in Belshire and will find you an escape. Thank you, milady.
Dinner came and went in the company of jovial servants. Emile took her dinner alone upstairs, for which Ariane was grateful. Reports of singing and dancing in the town trickled in, all of Frostborn, celebrating the news of Baron Carver's return to the world of the living, though Ariane had to think that some of the throaty cheers were for the departure of one Emile Ironhorn. By the time she had cleared her plate of the stewed venison and hard bread, the weariness of the journey finally overtook the excitement of exploring Frostborn. Oriana took leave to prepare her mistress for bed, and Ariane and Missa followed suit. Oriana came to collect Missa after she had combed out Ariane's hair and trimmed the lamps, and the two ladies' maids left her to herself. Outside, the wolves still howled into the night, always answered by the brusque braying of the hunt master's dogs. A chill was settling in, the banked fire losing its vigour. Ariane pulled her legs to her chest and started missing Davin, wondering where he was and what had called him away with such urgency. No more fretting, she reminded herself. She had spent most of the carriage ride prognosticating about Davin's whereabouts. If only he would come to Frostborn while she was there. She wanted nothing more than to lavish him with attention while Emile gawked in horror. While Frostborn was remote, if Baron Carver wanted her to leave Hightower and follow him to his lonely and wild estate, she would do it. She would go with him into the woods and hills and have him show her every view that inspired him. She might even take up shooting. A sigh escaped her lips. Thoughts such as those had to be kept in check for now. She reached back and unclasped the rose pendant and willed the vines of her bracelet to pull apart. A small table with a drawer sat at the side of the bed, and she pulled it open, dropping her jewelry inside. As she went to shut it, she saw it, a heavy iron key lying at the bottom of the drawer. Rust had nibbled away at it, mottling the metal. She carefully extracted the key, its rough and rusted exterior staining her hands. At first she thought it might be the key to her own room, but its disuse and size put her off that conclusion. Somehow she knew what it was for. It called to her, a ghostly invitation spurring her desire to know what waited behind the long shut door. But she had to wait. She extinguished the lamp at her bedside and pulled the blankets up around herself as the temperature plummeted. Only the flicker of a solitary candle and the lonely howling of distant direwolves kept her company. The sliver of light beneath her door flickered and faded, and the rise and fall of the servants' voices slowed and then fell silent. Finally, Frostborn had laid itself to rest. Ariane rose from her bed, wrapping a shawl about her shoulders, although it did little against the chill. She grabbed the key and the candle. As silently as she could, she pulled open her door and stole into the hallway. The wood of the floor chilled her bare feet, but she didn't want to waste time on stockings. The floorboards creaked wildly in spots, and she paused to listen, fearful someone would wake to investigate. But the house remained still, and in moments she stood in front of the door, the icy air breathing underneath the crack to numb her toes. The key slid into the lock with ease, and she twisted it. It hardly rotated. Gritting her teeth, she turned it harder, nothing but a slight squeal. Frustrated, she was about to abandon her design when a thought struck her. She lifted the candle from its sconce and tilted it, letting the greasy liquid wax gather in the bowl. Before it could harden, she poured it in the keyhole and thrust in the key, twisting it back and forth. Her hand was a mess of rust,
but with one determined turn the lock gave one mighty wail and clicked open. To her, the sound was like a scream reverberating through the house, yelling for everyone to awake. She paused to listen. The house remained quiet. She filled her lungs, a musty, dusty smell leaking out of the small crack in the door. Gathering her courage, she pushed it open, just enough so she could fit through, while the bulky hinges popped and whined in protest. Candle first, she went, feet collecting the thick dust on the floor. Once inside, the taste of dust filled her mouth, and she suppressed a sneeze threatening to escape from her tingling nose. Wild shadows danced in the abandoned study, candle flickering in a persistent draught. For some reason, this room was colder than the rest of the house, and she shivered. Holding the candle aloft, she squinted, peering into the darkness. And then she saw it. Her hand shot to her mouth to stifle a scream she knew would bring everyone in the house running to a room Davin never wanted anyone to see.